Hello, everyone. It's a Monday special. That's right. You saw me on Friday. You're going to see me again on this Monday. Have you got your technical drawings ready? Are they pinned up on the wall? If you've been fudging stuff in Reddit, we're going to know about it. Only joking. You can enjoy your lunch here in the safe zone. 20 seconds. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this live stream special. I'm super excited you're here. Now, I know you just got back into work. It's a Monday, but I promise you, I was only joking. This is going to be easy. This is going to be a breeze. No one's going to go through your technical drawings, although the guest I'm with actually does know how buildings stand up, unlike me. And on that note, I'm going to bring in here the fantastic Dieter Bentley-Gockman, who is director, does technical services and all that amazing stuff at EPR Architects. Dieter, how are you?
I'm very well, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good. Who would have known that when I was little old part one knocking around in the EPR kitchens trying to get out of doing work, you would be on my podcast someday. So we have met each other before, but for the benefit of those who haven't met you yet, can you first of all tell us who you are?
Yes. Hi, everybody. I'm Dieter. I'm currently the Technical Director at EPR Architects. I'm a trust architect by background, and I've also had a law training. So I did a construction law degree several years ago, and that led to a change in my career path from being a job running architect to working more on the technical side. So I get involved in all sorts, still in project stuff, but supporting designers and project runners to make sure they do their jobs properly and essentially stay on the right side of the law and the right side of gravity to make sure their projects work.
That is generally useful, isn't it? And especially when you got part ones and part twos, like myself, on projects which could do potential calamities, we need someone like you around. It's worth also mentioning, though, that you do help a lot of people do their part threes within EPR. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And so every year I have a new cohort. I take through their part threes and help support and mentor them and give them extra guidance and answer some of the questions that perhaps sometimes the courses or tutors don't fulfill. So hopefully that helps them a little bit along the way. But yeah, it's every year a new cohort, which is good. Keeps me on my toes.
Keeps you on your toes. I never made it to the cohort. So if you're worried thinking, why the heck does Steve never make it as an architect? And you're saying you work together. It's just because I never did part three, but I've heard many good things. Now, maybe we can just go, I want to talk all about EPR in a bit, but just before we do that. So you were a job running, you were doing all this stuff then. And when did that idea come around where you thought, you know what, actually, maybe I enjoy helping the design architects do the design on the in that supportive role?
Yeah, so my sort of formative years of practice were in small and medium-sized practices and doing a lot of smaller projects that just ran for a year, maybe 2 years. And so after I'd probably done about 10 projects I've been the main job runner on. And believe it or not, I started to get a little bit bored. And I thought, this just being shouted at by clients and shouting at contractors and running constantly for deadlines and things, I thought, oh, God, there's got to be something a bit more to this job. And I think I got to that stage that a lot of people get to where they think, I've done this, what's next?
Yeah.
And I enjoyed all the sort of contract admin side of things. And so I thought, actually, let's see if there's a role to specialize in that. And primarily, I was thinking maybe move into project management that I know a lot of architects do.
Yeah.
And then I saw the opportunity to do the construction law master's degree. And so I did that studying part-time, whilst working full-time. Did that for 2 years and really enjoyed that and really enjoyed the legal side. So I thought originally that I was going to move more into the legal arbitration adjudication dispute side of things. Did a stint working as an expert witness, which was really great work, really interesting. Worked on some professional negligence cases against architects, which was really good. but I missed the people and I missed the studio environment. So I wanted to move back to working within an architectural studio. And I was lucky enough, I went for an interview at EPR and a role came up to replace the then existing director.
Right.
And so I got that opportunity. So then moved back into large practice. And then it was just a thing of sharing what I'd learned, my experience with all the architects. And I really enjoyed it. And now I've been doing it for nearly 17 years.
You're doing well. You're doing well. You couldn't save me. No one can, but you're doing really well. I joke around. Thing is, though, because I went straight into industry at EPR. So for me, the idea of a tech, I learned about your team and it was there on support and you would help everyone from director level on the projects when, I don't know, there's some big things going on to helping me out, learn stuff as well. So it was a great resource, but I didn't know. I thought that was normal in every architecture practice. Because I hadn't been out there. And so it was interesting to learn that technical services wasn't in other architecture practices. So how do you even get that going back then? Did it start formulating when people were coming to you in the office and then you sat with the board at EPR and went, listen, I think we could do something here to provide
this? I was fortunate because it was a team that had been set up before I joined the practice.
Yeah.
And so it had been there for many years already. So it was already established as a team. But I think when it was originally set up, it was primarily just about a team of people writing specifications.
Right.
And when I joined, it was looking at, we can do more than this. We can provide more support. So having come from small and medium practices where that level of support wasn't there, I knew what it was like thinking, I need to turn somebody, I need to ask a question, and who should I ask?
Yeah.
And so it seemed an obvious thing to say, well, if we've this central resource, if we've got this team of people with it, different experiences, different perspectives, different knowledge bases, we could be really helpful to then provide that in-house support. And it's, I think everybody that has worked or does work at EPR, I hope values what we do. And certainly I've heard similar stories to yours, Stephen, where people have said, how did we ever do this without you? And then when they leave EPR and go somewhere else and a team like ours doesn't exist, they'd be like, oh, what do we do now? God, stand on 2 feet.
Do you ever get messages from ex-colleagues that go asking you one or two cheeky questions?
I have occasionally, yes.
You didn't get one from me.
I shan't tell you how I answer them, though.
Yeah, we'll leave that to the imagination. Maybe while we're on the topic of EPR, I'll bring quickly up the website. For anyone that's not familiar with EPR, I was there as a part one and a part two. I did really enjoy it. I do think it's a good practice. However, you've moved now to this really fancy new London studio, which I wasn't privy to. That's okay. I'm getting older now. It's all good. So this is the new studio, right? In a roundabout way. When was that set up, Dieter? Have you been in there for a year now at the technical team?
Yeah, just over a year. So we moved in December 2022. And yeah, we've been really lucky. It's a former orphanage that was converted to the Imperial War Museum's archive building. But they had a new building designed for their archive, which is now out the back. So this building was empty and they were quite restrictive about who they were prepared to sell the building to. But we were lucky that when they heard we were interested, we were able to get a long lease, I think 150-year lease on the building. So that enabled us then to go in, completely retrofit the whole thing. It was a dreadful 70s fit out and awful floors and suspended scenes. When we stripped it all out, we found some amazing, beautiful original tile floors. There's a, I think you've got the image just coming up, the original timber structure in the main hall, which was the original dining hall, which is now our events and sort of hub space. Yeah, it's a beautiful building. And the team that's worked on it have done a fantastic job. And it's a great space to work in.
It is, because it seems really nice. And I seem to remember you were at the top there, Dieter. Is that right, in the building at the moment?
Yes.
Did you pick that position by any chance?
Well, no. Maybe a little bit of persuasion.
Yeah.
Get a good spot.
I think after 17 years, you're allowed to do that. I think it's great. I was down there. There was a blip with the emails after I left. I promise I didn't do anything. Chris and Ben, don't sack me yet. It's a beautiful office. Everything works. Everything's cool. And I do think it's worth showing, actually, isn't it? Because I do think that an architect, the best thing you can do, one of the best things, is to design the place where you're working every day.
So, yeah, and like I say, I mean, it wasn't an easy job for the team that worked on it, because, of course, can you imagine, you're working on the design of a building where there's going to be 200 other people, all with a view and opinion on what you're doing and whether it's right or wrong. So they put up with a lot, but they've done a tremendous job. And I think everyone that would agree, it's a great space to work in. And it's brilliant because it's got the right balance between open studio space for communication, collaboration and all that, but balanced enough that it's not just one big cavernous space and it's got personality. So yeah, really nice.
I love it. Okay. And I think everyone should check it out. It is worth seeing. Dieter's in the top on one of the wings up there. Well-deserved after these years. Now, I want to just touch upon the other thing as well, is because while you've done this, it's important to talk about all your involvement with the ROBA and all that stuff. Now, at the time, I seem to remember you when I was way back when introduced, and you're like, oh, we're testing with the ROBA the new stages. And I was like, I don't really understand that. But you did. You helped co-author them 0-7. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't say this live because it's out there. But okay, it's the truth. I was like, I don't understand that. Before it was D, E, and F. Where I'm going with, you do have an active role with the ROBA, and I was at one of your book events the other night. So if EPR isn't enough, you're doing all this stuff as well. Where do you get the time and the drive to write these books? That's what I wanted to say.
An important part of my job and the job of my team is to, in a way, be one step ahead of what's going on in industry, because we can't possibly support all our colleagues if we don't know what's going on. Yeah. And so that's in part why I started to get involved with the executive team, the ROBA, to help them understand from a member's perspective what we need the ROBA to be doing. And then out of that work, I was invited to join their regulation standards group, which I then eventually ended up chairing. And so it was trying to bring the sort of members' technical expertise to the Institute to help inform their policy and guidance on what they were doing. And one piece of work that came out of that was the realization that although there was lots of health and safety guidance out there for architects and designers, none had been produced from an architect or designer's perspective. And there was lots of stuff that was, although it's going to be useful, it missed a lot of things that we do and that we need to know. And that's where the health and safety guide originally came from, because it was more than just CDM health and safety. It was more about what do you do if you're going on site for the first time, what do you need to know about visiting sites, particularly those that aren't construction sites. We all do site surveys and all that sort of stuff. So that's where the idea came from. Then Grenfell happened. Oh. And so there was the discussion about actually this guide needs to be more than just about site visits. It needs to be about health and safety in the broader context. So that's why we then introduced a piece about CDM, about fire safety and about legislation. And then with the Hackett report and then later change in regulations and the Building Safety Act and the change to the building regs, there was then a view of actually we need to go beyond just health and safety. We need to look at principal designers and what's principal designers going to do under the new regulations. And that's then where this second guide has come out of. So yeah, I had the tough job of sitting down in August once the legislation was published to try and quickly digest it, understand it, to get this written, to get it to publishers, to get it to the market as quickly as possible. So it's been a challenge. I say it's definitely been a challenge, but it's not just me. There's been a great team working. A lot of my colleagues at EPR, there's a lot of people at ROBA, there's lots of people, other architects that have advised, had input. So although my name's on the cover, it's a collective effort. Yeah. There's been a lot of people have helped me along the way.
Nice. And that's one of the feelings I always got from your team. It wasn't like there was proprietary stuff. It wasn't like you're hiding it. You actually do, all jokes aside, you do want to help and share. So I'm really pleased to see that this book is out there in the wild. And I think at EPR, the technical services team, it does make a big difference. And I can see why the day goes quick. You're involved in all these cool projects. What I was going to ask you, Dieter, is it would be really good. There's a few people probably out there, small architecture practices, or maybe they don't have that function. And I was going to wonder, do you have any tips for people on where to look for this information if they don't have the resources on EPR? Or is there any things that you always try to share, a little bit of advice to architects that could be useful in that pursuit of that information if they don't have a technical services team?
I think life in that respect has got a lot easier with the advent of the internet and social media. Because yes, I started work before the internet existed, which might be a shock to a lot of people. We did manage, but it was a lot harder. But no, seriously, there's a lot of information out there. I think it's mainly being aware of what you need to know. It's just being up to date with what's going on in industry, reading the journals, seeing what's out there, and being inquisitive. When you see something you don't know something about, have a look. There's always people talking about this. If you're an RBA member, there's lots of professional features. People like myself, we're writing to share information. You're being on LinkedIn, there's lots of people sharing their expertise and posting about what's going on. Yeah. All those sorts of avenues. But I think it's mainly understand what you like to engage with. Because one of the things that my team doing is always trying to say, how do we engage with people differently? Some people like to read stuff. Some people like to listen to something. Some people want to see it visually in terms of diagrams and pictures. So it's find the medium that works best for you and then tap into the source and keep up to date. It's applying time and energy and effort, but it rewards itself. The more every day's different, things are always changing. But that's what makes life exciting. That's what makes, I think, being an architect and a designer exciting. You know, it's always different.
Makes complete sense. Ollie actually says, yeah, we're small, we lack resources, so maybe some of the stuff that you said there, Dieter, can really help. Now, again, I'm rumbling myself here. When I was a part one, I used to go to the CPDs at EPR, and they were actually decent, most of them, right? There was one or two that it was a product I didn't understand, and I went because prep was out, and there was the good sandwiches. There was good CPDs there at EPR. Now I'm beginning to learn more about CPDs. Some architects have been so consumed with projects, they're rushing to get the CPD points at the end of the year and all that stuff as well. Just building upon what you said, in terms of CPDs, what do you have any advice for people on how to do that? Is it better to get, like, structure it through the year so that you get the stuff you need and not cram it at the end? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's quality rather than quantity is the important thing. When I did some work with the ARB, when they were looking at their competence criteria for architects, and one of the things I stressed a lot was don't have a time limit on it, because time isn't important. It's the quality of what you do. And I think it's certainly making sure what you do is relevant to the work you're doing and saying that's the main thing. And if you can plan what you need to do, whether that's over a 6-week period, 6-month period, 6-year period, doesn't really matter. But I think if you're conscious about knowing what you need to do, then it's much easier to program it in. And also don't feel it has to be hours and hours of work. It can just be small little bits and pieces. To punt my books again, I've written them specifically so they're easy to drop in and out. You don't have to sit down and read it cover to cover. You can dip in and out. You can read the chapters in different orders. You can just look at what you need when you need it. So it's finding those sorts of resources. And again, like I said earlier, find what works for you. There's lots of content on YouTube. There's lots of stuff on LinkedIn where you can just watch stuff on it. If you're on a short commute, that it all counts. If it's just picking up a journal, reading online stuff, it all counts. As long as it's valuable and it's of good quality, I think that's the main thing.
Maybe this even counts then. So it's like a point for you. A negative point that I'm on it. Somewhere in the middle, it's a point. That's a good idea. Maybe on the Architecture Social, we're coming for you, RBA, with the CPDs. I'm only joking, actually. I was on the RBA Council. CPDs should be everywhere, isn't it? I think the more and more information you have, and that's a really good point that you can plug all these in, I think that's really
every
useful.
Time you're learning something new, that's CPD. People tend to forget that, and people tend to undervalue a lot of what they're doing. For every project, there's always something different. You'll always be doing some element of research, reading. That all counts.
Good. That's a good tip there. What I was going to say, while I've got you here, I wanted to ask you about part three, because you've been helping people on part three for many years, whether it was my old friends Dan Medeiros and Barry Higgins back in the day. I just never made it with them. Barry still gives me grief about that. Where I'm going is the course has probably changed a lot over the years, or maybe you might tell me it hasn't. But for now, someone doing their part three, maybe not, who again, who doesn't have access to you helping them out and stuff, is there any advice you give people who are doing their part three in 2023, 2024?
Yeah, the context is still the same. Right. What constitutes being professional hasn't changed. but how we do it has. So I think in terms of when you're studying for part three, whether you do it now, whether you do it in the future, when you've done it in the past, the environment will be the same. You need to understand the law. You need to understand ethical behavior. You need to understand what's involved in putting a project together to make sure it works effectively. The time cost quality triangle, that's not ever going to change. But the way we do it, the processes have, like I was talking about earlier, before it would have been all books and paper. Now it's all digital and online. But the what we're trying to achieve is still essentially the same.
Yeah.
So I think, and this is what I say to all my part three is, once you've got the principles, think about how that applies to the work that you've already done and the work that you're doing, because it's a lot of it's about context. And a lot of what you do at part three, you've probably been doing already. You just didn't realize why you were doing it. And so it's bringing that conscious thought to the processes that you've probably been seeing and doing for a lot of time anyway.
Very cool. Makes complete sense. The other thing I was going to ask, because we're talking about career part, doing your part two, the part three is a big move. I joke around, but the reason I didn't do my part three is because I was like similar, but I went a slightly different way, is that I was like, I don't see myself as a job running architect. I want to do something differently. So you've done profound stuff. You're doing books. And when I left, I wanted the money, right? And that's what I wanted. I was like, I'm going to go in sales. And it's worked out in a different way. Haven't been as rich as I wanted, but enjoyed it along the way. Where I'm going with this, though, is that sometimes people feel like they might want to do different things. Mm-hmm. And one of the technical services team is more like a supporting act, isn't it? It's like people who have that experience that can help a design architect to do things. What do you look for on your team when you're hiring someone? Who do you think fits in that role? Well, you don't want someone like me, but what kind of person do you look for when you're hiring for this team?
I think the primary thing is the want and the enjoyment of sharing knowledge and collaborating with others. It sounds a bit daft because I think as architects, generally, that's what we do anyway. But I think it's the wanting to share, the wanting to help, the mentoring aspect of what we do is extremely rewarding. And also enjoying the challenge of the unexpected. One of the beauties of architecture and a career in the construction industry generally is it's so diverse and there's so many different opportunities to do different things. But working in a team like mine, particularly because we work with nearly 200 designers, you just don't know every day what somebody's going to need, what question's going to arise, what the requirement for the day is. And no matter how well you plan your day, it always goes differently.
Yeah.
But that's what it's exciting. And it's people that enjoy the element of the unexpected, but within the safety net of a framework of this has got to be done in a certain way. We've got to bring certainty to an uncertain world. How do we do that? And how do we support those that are on the coalface of job running to do the best that they can?
That makes complete sense. You know what I was thinking though when you were speaking as well, because every day is different and I imagine sometimes you get critical stuff. Now obviously you can't say specific information and you can be a bit fuzzy about confirm or deny. Like sometimes the president, they're like 20 minutes away from saving the world because it was going to be a nuclear explosion. Have the stakes ever got very high on your desk with all this legal stuff on projects where you've had to come in and save the day?
I don't know whether I'm grateful or disappointed that it's not that exciting, which is a good thing, but maybe not. But everybody that's been job running knows you face crisis points where a client might be going up the wall, something might be going horribly wrong on site. There are high stressful situations, and there are occasions where I've been able to support the team and to help fix something or sort something out to avoid the worst repercussions. But the reality is things will always go wrong on projects. That's life. And it's understanding that and accepting that. And I think probably one of the greatest strengths of my team is to be able to give people that chance to just take a step back and to realign their perspectives and look again at the horizon and say, actually, what's going wrong isn't that important. Everything can be fixed. Everything can be sorted out. And as long as what's happening doesn't endanger somebody's health or safety, it doesn't result in somebody having an injury, obviously that's a critical moment, But most stuff we do, it can be fixed. It can be sorted out. Yeah, there's been some exciting things and some fairly major things that have gone wrong that we've sorted. But yeah, nuclear war, don't think we go near that, fortunately.
Fair enough. I accidentally submitted the Ram Brewery project back in the day with missing out a whole floor. And I'm sure in Pascal's world, that was pretty nuclear at the time. But luckily, it didn't trickle down.
Did the world end? Nobody died.
No, I just resubmitted it. But there was like an hour where I just was like, I just can't do this anymore. It was one of them. But great story now. But I'll have to... The building's there. The building's there. It's really nice. So... It's all worked out really well.
And we all have those. And the thing is, I think we all have those experiences in life. And one of the pleasures of my job is being able to share my learning from my experience to help somebody else to either avoid that going wrong or to help them get space to say, okay, we can sort this out. We can work on this together. You're not alone.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Now, again, I joke, but it's part true, that while I don't know the ins and outs of everything you do, I don't want to, not a pointed question, but it's the start of 2024, it's February, and I just wanted to know what your outlook in the industry is at the moment. Do you feel, because I was detecting there's a little bit of positivity here, people are waiting for the interest rate to drop and stuff. Mm-hmm. Are you feeling optimistic going into 2024 at the moment, or have you got a lot of work ahead of you this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's still some dust to settle on 22. There was a lot of change last year. Terms of economy, and I think from my perspective, the introduction of the Building Safety Act, the change to the building regulations, that's created a lot of uncertainty. But I think we're starting to see the dust settle on that. People are getting used to the idea. Yes, I think the economy is getting better. I think a lot will depend on what happens with the general election, when that happens, and then B, what happens as a consequence. But hopefully that will be a positive thing as well. So I think, at this stage in the year, the jury's still out. But okay. I am a natural optimist, so I think it's going to be a good year.
Are you? And my partner described me as optimistically pessimistic, so there you go. So that's apparently what it is. I was going to ask you one more question, actually, because this year we're seeing AI more prevalent within the industry. And it was an interesting thought I had, because part of what you do is you're a resource there for people, all this stuff. But now we're starting to see it blur into projects. You're starting to see the bits and bobs maybe of ChatGPT using AI. I use it in a business all the time to try and do the mundane stuff to get that out of the way. What's your thoughts about AI being involved in projects? Is it a good thing, but maybe something we need to manage, or is it something that you think we have to be careful of, Dieter?
I think it's like all things in life, there's opportunities and there's risks associated with it. I think you hit the nail on the head when you say you get it to do the mundane things.
Yeah.
What's something that surprised me a lot, it seems that architects and designers are looking at AI to design and be creative. And I don't understand that. Why aren't we looking at it to do the schedules, the specifications, all the nuts and bolts, the technical compliance, essentially the stuff that I help with? I see a great opportunity for ChatDBG to do my job for me, to do all that stuff. So then I can concentrate on the unusual stuff, the innovation, the research, the exciting stuff, the looking forward to the future.
And I
think that's the greatest asset. It could take a lot of the workload off us in terms of the drudgery, the day-to-day compliance stuff, which then frees us up to do the stuff we all enjoy, the creative bit, the designing bit.
Yeah, because there's two bits in that. Because back in the old days, remember, we used to have the minute book, and I used to use it religiously because that was an important document. However, with the way AI is going and stuff now, you can basically record and get it to minute a whole meeting. And I think it does a pretty damn good job of it because it sucks it all in, and it's stuff like that where I think it could be really useful, but I wanted to see if you agreed that's a good use of tech.
I think there is certainly an opportunity there, and I agree, but I think the danger potentially is that there is a process that you go through when you, to use your example, doing minutes, where you digest and reflect on conversations that have happened that cement and solidify that knowledge and the idea of this is what we do next.
Right.
The danger of AI is it does all that for you, so you miss a whole step of analysis and thought.
Yeah.
It speeds the process up, And therefore, you could very quickly race towards the wrong answer because you haven't had the time for reflection. And I've seen that a lot already with just the digital technology that we have. There's a constant expectation that we're going to produce more, we're going to produce more quickly. And it just becomes a race against time and a push for quantity rather than quality and stopping and saying, actually, there's a better way of doing this. There's a more efficient way of doing this. And actually, it's going to end up with a better result if we just stop and reflect for a moment. And that's my only concern. We forget we're human, yeah, and we do need a bit more time, and we do need to stop and reflect. And actually, we need to just talk to each other a bit more about what the right thing or the next thing should be, rather than letting the technology decide for us.
Well said. Fair enough. I'll dust off my old book and pen. I joke around. You're right, though. There is something about connecting pen to paper, mm-hmm, which is really thoughtful. Karen Fruger, which does coaching for directors or leaders, actually, she has a journal, and she gave me one, and I started using it because she said it applied to any business, but she tailored it a little bit for architects. And actually, when you're writing stuff, it makes you think, isn't it? And that was the point.
And I think it's all too easy currently when we are under so much pressure that it's so easy not to make that time. And I think it's important every day you have time to just stop, think, reflect. It's often people come to me that, oh, I need to do this and I need to do that. And I'm like, hang on, you don't. Wait, sleep on it. Think about it, come fresh in the morning, then think about it again. And nine times out of 10, you've probably thought of, your subconscious does the work for you in the night and you come up with a much better solution in the morning. So that whole thing of just rushing all the time, easy for me to say, but not so easy to put into practice. But I think it's an important skill to develop to get that, to just make that space for yourself to make sure you do the right thing.
Yeah, fair enough. And the only reason I was slightly giggling in the background there is because Ollie Sanger says, shout out to ChatDBG. So we just need to script you, Dieter, and charge a subscription fee and you'll be a millionaire.
If anybody's out there is any good with the coding, I'm happy to, we could do a joint effort on this.
You can.
It's got to be a future in it. It's going to be my retirement fund.
You could put your book in and then optimize results and who knows. But you've got enough on your plate anyways. I know you're busy. But before you go, I always like to ask my guests if they have one or two questions for me. And you have the added benefit or detriment, whichever way you're looking at it. You've had to even deal with me for 12 years or something now. Would you like to ask me a question on live?
I just want, you've mentioned, obviously, you worked at EPR and then you took a change in direction in your career.
Yeah.
If you were to live your life again, do you think you would make that same decision? Would you make a different decision? It's, you know, looking back on now, you can see what's happened to the profession since you moved out of frontline job running.
Yeah.
Would you do anything different, you think?
No, I always say that I'd do it all again. And I think the architecture education, wherever you apply it to, I think the way I look at business, everything, it comes from there and it comes from working in practice. I always joke, I don't design a building, the architecture, social function in business. And that's how I approach it. And really, without the experience of EPR, I don't know if I would be as successful as I am now. Did I enjoy doing the drawings when I was there? No, it was something missing. And it was, where it was weird in EPR is that I always joke about Barry Higgins, right? And he was there and he sat down with me. I think Scott was away, who was one of the team leaders there at the time. Barry sat down and he gave me a task on the roofs. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. Looking at the book, I should have come over to your team, really. Too lazy.
Would have made sense. Right.
Yeah, it would have made sense. And he was like, you know, you got to do this. You got to be passionate about it, Steve. You've got to work it out. And I looked at him and I went, Barry, I'm just not passionate about it. And then I went, I'm not passionate about it. And I was like, I've got to get another job or do something. And that was the moment. And where I'm going with this is architecture is an amazing profession. Mm-hmm. You just got to have that thing to keep going because it's hard. It's a hard job. That's why I think architects are amazing people. They do so much to get these buildings built. Like yourself, you overcome all these problems, all these fire, all this stuff. This is such an amazing job. But to keep going in all that adversity and all that challenges, you got to be passionate about it. And if you aren't, I think you can apply the skills elsewhere. So that's what I did. And I literally rocked up to a recruiter and went, I'm going to look for a job. And they're like, oh, you're a chatterbox. And I was like, I'm in. I don't care anymore. But does that make sense in one way? Answer your question. All the skills you learn in architecture, I think, is so important and very transferable. Look at it like, last thing before we go, I say is, in architecture, you learn how to pitch projects. It's really important, public speaking. Some people are very good at writing things, just like journalist skills. It's highly analytical, highly mathematical, highly designed, spatial awareness is off the chart. So architects have this massive skill stack, which for some reason we're not proud and about. Yeah. So I think we need to just remind ourselves all the good stuff.
Absolutely. I agree. It's interesting because people ask me the same question. Do I miss project running? And I answer a very similar thing. I say, no, because I'm still, although I'm not on the coal face of doing it, I'm working with so many people are.
Yeah.
And I'm still contributing to that process. I'm still enjoying it and being part of it.
And I think you can add more in a bizarre way, I think, when you do that, because I think, bizarrely, me running around like a mad box of frogs in the architecture social is probably more value in the industry. Yes, there's the commercial side of it, but also, you know, we were involved with the Reba President campaign and Maya got to the office. Did I know at the time that would happen? No, but you can do more of this stuff. So I always encourage people to do that. And probably on that note, if people are interested in learning more about moving cyber's careers, if you're interested in sales, come on down. If you're interested in helping architects build buildings, then you're probably a good place to speak to at that point. On that note, though, if someone wants to ask about EPR, if they want to learn more about yourself, if they want to learn about the books, all that stuff, Dieter, where do people find you?
Here, there, and everywhere.
You're around. Chat.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect and message me on LinkedIn or my email address. I don't know whether you've pinged it up anywhere.
I was going to wait to see if you said, because I don't want to dox you on GDPR or anything, but you're around, you're on EPR and you're happy to share your email then? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I'll put it in the link afterwards. Thank you so much, Dieter, for being here, being there, being everywhere. As you say, people should reach out to you. I really appreciate your time. Stay on the stage, Dieter, for one more minute while I close this down. But thank you in the audience. Hopefully this has been useful. If you've had to endure me to get through all the Dieter stuff, then well done you. And reach out to him and check out his books as well. And also, EPR's office is not bad. Maybe you can knock on the door. Maybe they'll let you in. I'm sure, actually, really friendly bunch, so I'm sure it'll be fine. More content coming soon. I don't know what it is, but more content coming soon. Thank you so much. Have a lovely Monday. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye now.